Welcome to Energy Radio. This is a very special episode for me because we have a visitor from all the way in Europe who has come to record this in person. And so without further ado, I'm going to welcome my friend and business partner, Joachim Bystrom, to Energy Radio. Welcome.
Thank you.
And you literally came from Sweden yesterday?
Yes.
Excellent. Wow. Well, we're honored to have you, and it's your first time in Canada. Is that true?
Yes, that's unfortunately true.
First, but we will make sure it's not your last.
Mm-hmm. Yes? No, we'll come back.
Yes, good, good. Well, so you are, give us your story. How do you come to the energy space? Mm-hmm. And then we'll talk about your company and the technology and who knows where it'll go. But first, if you are willing, tell us about you.
Well, I grew up in an entrepreneur family. So all my father's sisters and brothers became entrepreneurs in different areas. And my grandfather, he produced wooden sticks of different kinds, and they got into mass production. So all the kids had to do their small work, and they got paid by each stick that they produced.
Okay.
And this had really stuck in our family, to mass produce things.
Uh-huh.
And then I went to university and got involved in green energy in different ways and in environmental negotiations around the world. And this led to us being a group of technical interested people working together to start a company to solve the challenge with heat
right.
in industries and using concentrated solar energy for this. And then I could take this mass production that has been in my family for decades,
yes.
and see how to apply this to mass producing solar collectors that can produce heat and steam.
Uh-huh. I've always known, you've told me before about the entrepreneurial piece, but the mass production piece, that puts another puzzle piece in for me. So I like that. I appreciate you sharing that.
Mm.
And so that then translates into the company that you're building now, or to walk us through kind of the founding of
yes,
your company.
My first career was with my father. He invented a small portable sawmill, the Logosol sawmill.
Okay.
And I became export manager there, selling this small portable sawmill around the world. So I actually sold 2,000 sawmills in Russia.
Wow.
Personally.
Okay, okay.
And after working in Absolicon, working in Logosol then for almost two decades, I decided to start my own company using this research and the work that we did on concentrated solar thermal.
And so you said you were at Logosol for, did you say two decades?
Yes.
So the research was from two decades prior? Is that
right?
Yeah,
we started about 2000, year 2000 with the research on
okay,
the solar
collectors. Okay, okay. And then when do you leave your dad's employment and start
2006.
Okay, 2006. Okay, yes. Okay, gotcha.
So I spent my whole youth traveling around in the world.
Right.
Demonstrating and selling sawmills.
Yes, yes, yes. Right. And so just a quick funny anecdote from when we met this morning was, you know, you couldn't believe how many trees were in Canada, how many forests were in Canada. And then I couldn't believe that knowing you sold sawmills, that you hadn't been to Canada. And your answer was?
Yeah, it's good that you have many trees, but the trees doesn't buy sawmills.
Yeah.
You need to find the rich people who are living in cities. They are the ones who buy sawmills.
Yes, it wouldn't be wise for trees to buy sawmills. Yeah. Good. Okay, so 2006 is when you start your journey with Absolicon,
yes.
the company that you're now the CEO and the founder of. So kind of maybe that is different than what certainly we know today in terms of what Absolicon has become, but maybe talk to us a bit about kind of what your vision was or how those early days. Kind of give us the backstory.
Yeah, we saw this, that concentrated the solar heat is the most efficient way of produce energy.
Okay.
It can be cheaper and use less resources than anything else. And we looked around in the world and we couldn't see those products.
Uh-huh.
And we took the manufacturing cost of the sawmills and we applied that to the solar collectors. And we saw, why haven't anyone done this?
Right, right.
And I'm in engineering physics from Uppsala. So I went to the big library in Uppsala and I went through all the research from solar thermal. And I could see that different research groups that had solved different parts of this challenge, but no one had put it together to a mass production to actually to get it to the right crust.
Right, okay. So now a couple questions just for clarity. So you talk about concentrating solar. Maybe unpack that a little bit and compare it to other types of solar thermal.
Yes. Okay. First, we can say that the thing that people are most used for today is PV, making electricity from
the
sun.
Yes.
And then you have between 12 and 20% efficiency on a solar panel making electricity. But if you want heat, it's very inefficient to make electricity with 20% efficiency and then make heat out of it.
Right.
Then you instead can have basically a black surface that when the sun shines on the black surface gets hot.
Yes.
And you can get the heat for heating hot water.
Okay.
The problem is that if you have a big black surface, then you also lose a lot of heat. You need to have insulation and so on. But what we did is that we built a mirror that could focus the light on a narrow, small black pipe. And this black pipe gets 160 degrees hot. But it's super small, so it doesn't lose much of the heat.
Okay.
And the pipe, actually, we call it the Harry Potter pipe because it's magic.
That's magic, okay. Yeah,
it absorbs all the visible light, but it does not emit any infrared. So it doesn't lose heat radiation.
Okay.
And with this pipe in the center of this mirror construction, we can then generate heat for industries and district heating very efficient.
I often use the description of my youth where we would take a magnifying glass and go on the driveway and we would burn insects because you could concentrate the heat. And that's how I've often thought about your technology is you have this big, long
trough.
My mother is from agriculture, so I describe it sometimes as a feed trough, but it's very, very shiny and reflective, and then it's reflecting to this, concentrating into this this pipe in the center. So when you say concentrating solar, you're contrasting that with just a flat plate or a vacuum plate type technology.
And the flat plate, it's good if you just want 65 or 70 degrees Celsius, but we want to run industries, and then you want to have steam at 160.
Yeah. Now let's pause there and talk about, you're wearing a pin.
Yeah. And the heat is half.
Talk to us about heat is half because I love that.
Yes, but when people think about how the world works, they think that the world is run on electricity and that decarbonizing electricity is the big climate challenge. But electricity is only 20% of the total end consumption of energy. 20%. And 30% is transport, all our cars and planes and boats. And 50% is heat.
Yes.
But this is something that people in general does not see because the heat is hidden in all the daily goods that we consume. Like our clothes and our medicines. They are not made by electricity. They are made by burning fossil fuel to get heat, running different heat processes. But when in our daily life, we need to charge our iPhone, we put on the lights, we have a fan. And we think that this is how the world works. It runs on electricity. But if you come to a textile mill to make jeans, for example, we visited one of those big textile mills in India.
Oh, yes.
The process of making jeans is that you have a hot bath where you bleach the cloth, and then you dye the cloth, and then you wash the cloth, and then you dry the cloth. And all of these are heat processes that you run by burning coal.
Yes.
So to produce 1 kilo of jeans cloth, you burn 2 kilos of coal.
Whoa!
Yeah. But people think that electricity, well, a pair of jeans, you see this small lady sewing the pair of jeans, and they think that it's made by electricity. And this is the same over and over again. If you take like a small tea bag, maybe people have not thought much about how tea is made, but they would probably say it's made by electricity. But to dry 1 ton of tea leaves, you burn 5 tons of firewood. So around those tea factories in Africa and India, all the forest is cut down and burnt to produce the tea, and they planted eucalyptus instead, the monoculture, to be able to get all the firewood needed to dry the tea.
Wow.
And that's the same again and again. If you take the small medicine for headache, for example.
Yes.
To produce that, to distillate the water and to dry out this small tablet, you use heat. You don't use electricity. Or the paint on the wall or the beer, all of this is made by heat, not by electricity. So that's why 20% electricity, 30% is transport, and 50% is heat.
Wow.
But this is forgotten by the politicians and in the debate and everything. So people think they can build windmills to solve this. And that's great because we need to stop burning coal to make electricity.
Yes.
But to make the heat for the industrial processes, we need to use solar thermal to right. take the light from the sun directly to make heat out of it and run the industrial processes.
Yeah. I often remember a famous Super Bowl commercial where a large beer company had these, it was a wind farm, and it had these iconic horses riding in front of it. And those who know the ad or know the horses will know which beer company I'm talking about. And it was, you know, 100%. I think they said 100%, like beer from 100% renewable. Mm. I think they might have said energy, but I'll give them the benefit of the doubt and say electricity.
Yes.
And my father, who's been in wind development for 20 years, was very excited. I said, yeah, but, you know, they're still burning fossil fuel to make all that beer in their steam plants, right? Mm. And I think that's, you know, electricity, to your point, it's easy to understand. It's commonplace. And so it's easy to understand how with wind and solar we decarbonize that. But the heat part is more complicated, and you're right, it's easy to forget it. Right?
Yes.
And it's important that we keep talking about it. And that's why I love heat is half, is it just rolls off the tongue, right? And it's like, well, what does that mean? Oh, let me tell you, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And talk to us about, you know, in particular, you know, still focused on your technology, heat, you know, electricity, yes, it has different voltages, but it's either 50 hertz or 60 hertz, AC or DC, but electricity is electricity aside from the voltage. And I guess the analogy with heat is the quality of the heat, right? So talk to us about, you know, your technology and its space in, you know, the heat and how it makes it different and how it's, you know, well suited for certain types of heat.
Right. Okay, then we get a little technical, but
that's solar, okay. That's good. We like to nerd out. So that's good.
That if you look traditionally at solar thermal, it's has been used for domestic hot water. So you have black boxes on your roof making 60-70 degree hot water, storing it in the heat accumulator and having domestic hot water. And if we look at Europe, for example, there are 10 million homes running hot water from solar collectors on the rooftop. If we look there, then you use this technology to have those temperatures. Then you have another technology that got this idea before the PV to make electricity out of the heat from the sun. And there is where you see those tower, for example, where you get 400 degrees hot in the top of the tower and a lot of mirrors focusing all the sunlight to the top of the mirror. And they also have large parabolic troughs that are like 7 meters wide and 400 meters long, doing 400 degree hot oil. And this 400 degrees you can use to run a steam turbine and generate electricity. And before PV got so extremely cheap, thanks to the enormous Chinese investments, people thought that this that is called concentrated solar power would be the way we made electricity in the future. But PV basically outcompeted concentrated solar power. So we are in between.
Okay.
You have the domestic hot water at like 70 degree. You have the CSP at 400. And Absolicon, we work between 100 and 160 degree, which is exactly what is needed for those textile mills and for the breweries and the whole food and beverage industry, much of the chemical industry as well.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and what we've seen with, I know you're going to the Renewable Thermal Collaborative conference. I wish I could go later this week in Washington, D.C. And they've published some great papers around, you know, I just love that paper. I think it's their vision document or something. And it really looks at the different types of industrial heat. And then it matches with it the different types of decarbonization technology. And it's very clear that, you know, it's certain, you know, hydrogen. I just had a conversation about hydrogen. And it's all the rage. But you know, if you want to burn hydrogen, you're going way up the temperature scale, and then in most cases, you're bringing it way back down again, right?
Yes.
So, you know, it's expensive. It's hard to come by, and you know, whereas solar thermal might be a really nice fit for that middle band of heat, right? And I think that's what you folks are seeing.
I think the hydrogen will be great for the steel industry, replacing coal in the steel industry.
Yes.
But for a brewery that needs 160 degrees, solar thermal is much more feasible.
Yeah. So now we've talked about the parabolic trough collector. We've talked about the heat temperature. Talk to us about, like, describe to us a typical project. What, you know, what would we see if we went there? Mm-hmm. You know, how does it integrate? Maybe paint us a picture of a typical project.
Yes, we have built with Carlsberg in Greece, for example, and that's then a solar field. So when you come up to the factory, you can see that on the lawn outside, there are those shiny parabolic collectors following the sun during the day. And actually, the mirror are reflecting the blue of the sky. So it's actually like a blue field.
Oh, yes. I didn't know that. Oh, cool. Nice. Okay.
And in the center of each collector, there is this black pipe that is then filled with pressurized hot water at 160 degrees. This hot water is going into a container, a white container behind the solar collectors where steam is produced. That is then fed to the pasteurizer of the brewery.
Okay.
So if you go there, it's completely silent.
Right.
And every minute the sun is shining, you're making steam for the brewing process without any emissions or any costs.
Yes.
It's just running.
Right.
You just do the one-time investment and then you have free energy forever.
Right. And so it's really, we talk about the collector, but it's really a field or an array of collectors.
Yes.
In that way, it is similar to PV, that it's multiple, you know, units, and we'll come to the mass production in a minute, but it would be a field of, you know, as many as are needed or as fit, right?
And a good rule of thumb is that for an industry, you need about the same size of solar field as the size of the floor area of the factory.
Okay, okay.
And often the big factories, when they built a factory, they thought they might expand in the future. So they have extra space on the backside of the factory. And if that space is about as big as the factory, then there is a given place there.
Gotcha.
Or you might have a parking lot. And then you can use the space of the parking lot for the solar collectors, making an elevated structure.
Right. Because it's already, it always is sitting on a racking structure.
Yes.
It is a little bit elevated, you know, from the ground. So just to elevate it a bit further.
Yeah, so you can park your...
Right.
And actually, another rule of thumb is if you come to a city.
Yes.
And in Europe, you know, we have 6,000 district heating networks.
Right.
So we have a central boiler and then all the houses get their heat from the central boiler. And then the rule of thumb is that you need the same space as the golf course. Yeah. So if you take a city and you wonder how much solar connectors do you need here to run the whole city, you just look at the size of the golf course.
Okay.
And a big city like the city of Helsinki, for example, they burn 500,000 tons of coal every year to heat the city of Helsinki. And they have 35 golf courses. So then you immediately see, you need this size of solar collector to replace the 500,000 tons of coal.
Right. Okay. So we've just alienated our listeners who are big golfers, but we'll continue. No, it's a great rule of thumb. Yeah.
Yeah. The plan is not to put the collectors on the golf courses, but if there was possible to find the space for the golf courses, there should be possible to find a place to solve the climate change.
Yes, totally agree. And talk to us about... you have, it's not just a static panel. Mm-hmm. There's a control. Talk to us about, you know, the actuation of the panels.
Yes. To make this magnifying glass function, you need to focus that very closely on the sun.
Right.
So we have a Siemens control system that has an algorithm that knows exactly where the sun is all the time. And we built a very sturdy mechanic tracking. Actually, it might sound strange, but tracking is one of the things that has been tricky for companies trying to make this kind of technology.
Okay.
And I think if you have PV tracking systems and you go around and see those, you will see that some of them are always pointing in the wrong direction.
Right.
But absolute collectors, we are always on track for the sun.
Okay.
But that has been one challenge.
And that has been something that you've worked very hard to develop.
Yes,
right? That's
from
not
the
just
beginning.
Something off the shelf. That's been something very intentional with Siemens, I think, from a collaboration perspective, right? Yeah, good. And so let's, you know, as we start to talk about collaborations, we've kind of painted the picture of the project, but let's now move to kind of the Absolicon kind of business model in terms of, you know, these are not small pieces of equipment, you know, and they're not cheap to ship. You know, talk to us about what the goal is in terms of rolling this out worldwide.
What we are doing is actually something that people have been doing since the 1890s, taking mirrors, concentrating the light, and making steam. Actually, the Swedish inventor, John Ericsson, who did the monitor,
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
He invented the propeller, but he also invented this solar furnace that he had in New York. And he said that this will replace oil and coal in the future.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the technology is old.
Right. Yes.
But it's been tricky to get this, the light actually to get where it should.
Right.
And the way people have done this in the past is that they go to a field and they bring all the mirrors and the pipes and stuff and they start welding and screwing and putting the field up in the field.
Okay, yes.
But it's very tricky to get the optical precision that you need to do this. So one of Absolicon's concept has been that the solar collector with the reflector and the pipe that is mass produced in a robotized production line centrally. And each and every collector is verified with a camera system that check that every one of these 5.5 meter long and 1 meter wide collectors have the right optical efficiency. And this is how we actually have the highest ever measured optical efficiency of a small parabolic trough. We convert 76.4% of the incoming light to heat.
Wow.
While the PVs just make 20% of it in electricity. And this is thanks to the robotized product, robotized process where we make them and verify each or every one of the collectors. But then also, this made the collectors very bulky because it's built together.
Yes, right.
So when we started Absolicon, that was a strong idea of being part of changing the world's energy supply. And we realized that making solar collectors in Sweden and shipping around the world would not do this.
Right, right.
But selling hundreds of robotized production lines that locally, using local material and local workforce, mass produce solar collectors for each and every city in the world,
right,
that would actually change the world's energy supply. So that is the Absolicon concept. We sell robotized production lines that mass produce the world's best solar concentrator using local material.
Okay, cool. So the vision is that, you know, and you know, full disclosure, that's how we've gotten to know each other, is we're hoping to do that here in North America through a related company. But the vision would be that there would be a robotic production line, you know, local to where we are, that for all of our local projects, then, you know, we are maybe buying some of the components from you, and certainly, you know, you're helping us with the quality, but the quality is really done because it's a robot. There's a testing piece at the back end, and you're not shipping them, you know, over the ocean. You're moving them by truck, but you're moving them a very short distance. That's really the vision of having multiples of those throughout the world, you know, local to everything, right?
Yes. And I think this is how it need to look like if we're going to manage to reduce the consumption of oil and gas. You need to have local production of the equipment that is going to replace it. We can't, like with the PV, just get everything from China. Now they do 97% of all the PV comes from China.
Wow, wow.
And so we are totally depending on them.
Yes.
And it's the same with the wind power.
Right.
But when it comes to solar thermal, we show that we can actually locally produce everything that you need to turn from making heat from fossil fuel to using solar thermal.
Right on. And how is that journey going in terms of, you know, I know how we're doing. We're trying to build out our market. How's it going elsewhere in Europe in terms of building out these partnerships with other, you know, potential mass production sites?
Yeah, we have signed agreements with entrepreneurs around the world. In Mexico, South America, South Africa, Zimbabwe, India, Australia, Spain, Italy.
Okay.
So we have a lot of processes ongoing
to
build those production lines.
Yes.
But it starts with actually finding the multinational companies investing in the solar fields. But because no one wants to buy a production line if there's not a market.
Right, right.
So Absolicon right now, we are in the process of marketing the concept of using solar thermal.
Right.
And it might sound that easy, but actually the companies are quite happy using fossil fuel.
Yeah,
they think it's a good solution.
Yeah. Let's, you know, the podcast is intended to talk about kind of project development and those early stages prior to, you know, the project getting built. And you know, we can certainly share our stories, but what are some of the stories you're running into in terms of, you know, it's clear heat is half and, you know, 73%, you know, capture of the energy, and, you know, you can do medium temperature heat, you know, all of these good things. And yet, I think you're still running into some obstacles. What are some of the obstacles that you're seeing as you're out there with these multinationals or others? Mm-hmm. What would they have to object to, right?
Like, yes. Yeah, we can say that we have sold to or have agreements with 7 of the world's largest food and beverage companies.
Okay, like okay.
Pepsi, Budweiser, Coca-Cola.
Oh, wow, okay.
EI, Carlsberg, Peroni. But we also have contact with many, many others.
And sure.
One common first question when we sit down is that they say, we want to have 100% renewable because we have promised the market that in 2030, we will have 100%.
Right.
And of course, solar thermal does not work at night.
Right.
And it works not as good in winter. So you need to combine like maybe 20, 40% solar thermal, and you need to have some heat pumps, and you need to have some electrification, maybe somewhere some hydrogen, but you need to combine different solutions. But this is a common problem that we run into, that they think that there will be a silver bullet that can just solve all their decarbonization problem.
Right.
But replacing this fossil fuel that has taken 100 years to build, it is a big challenge.
Yes, yes. And do you feel like it's even harder because on the electricity side, a lot of these companies have gone and they've signed power purchase agreements where they're working with some big developer, and with I'm oversimplifying it, but with the stroke of a pen, they've electrified or they've greened all of their electricity, and there's some analogies for that on the thermal side, but it's not quite as simple, right? Do you feel like that's part of it, is that it was easier with electricity and heat is just harder?
Yes, and this one that we can simplify as they lifting the receiver and calling their electric supplier and asking for green electricity, it still took them 10 years
good point.
Do this. Yes.
Good point, yes.
But
yes.
They also got a little, they were actually, by signing those long green electricity contracts, they were able to cut their cost by 20% of their electricity. And now they expect they can do the same with heat.
Okay, yes,
and,
right.
And, you know, we have a story when we came to one that paid 60 euro per megawatt hour for the heat, and we did a big project, and we came to, I think it was 65 euro per megawatt hour for a solar thermal solution that had the same price for 20 years into the future. And they said, no, but that is more expensive than fossil fuel. We can't take that.
Right.
You
right.
need to be cheaper than fossil fuel.
Right, right.
And this, I think, also is something that we meet over and over again, that they have this solution they have today, but they say that, okay, we can help save the world, but it needs to be profitable.
Aha, yes, right.
And here, profitable, what they would prefer is 3 years payback time.
Right, right.
Then they could save the world easily. But solar thermal, as we proposed now, it have like 7-8 years payback time.
Right.
Oh, and then it's a stretch if we're going to save the world or not, because that doesn't look profitable enough.
Right, right.
So here, I think there is an unreasonable demands of that new technology being brought into the market would immediately outcompete fossil fuels.
Right, right, okay.
The strange thing there is that we can actually do it.
Right, right.
And so that's
right.
a challenge we have put to us, but it doesn't really feel fair every time when we make proposals.
Yes, yes.
They want to have 100% renewable with lower cost than their daily, very low natural gas price.
Right, right. And have you had success in areas where you're not cheaper at this point? Not lower cost at this point. Have you had conversations where you can get them to understand, you know, that it's still the right thing despite the premium?
I think the dialogue is changing very rapidly.
Okay.
When we did this 3-4 years ago, this was a totally different narrative.
Okay.
But we are closing up to 2030, and several of those companies, they have promised to have 100% renewable energy, both heat and electricity, by 2030.
Right.
So time is running out for them.
Right.
So from just demanding 100% lower, they have learned now that, well, electricity is very expensive. You're going to replace gas with electricity. It's 3 times more expensive.
Yes.
The hydrogen is even more expensive.
Right, yes, yes, yes.
So I think they are taking in that, okay, we do an investment in solar thermal. It's a big investment, but then we know exactly what the cost of energy will be the coming 20 years for our plant.
Yeah.
And no other technology can promise this.
Right, right, right.
So,
yes.
And I think we will see now also the dialogue is continue to change in the direction that people understand the challenge.
Yeah, okay, yeah. We see that as well, where, you know, everybody's excited about electrifying their boiler plant with electric boilers, and then they pick up the phone and call the electric utility, and then they hear crickets on the, you know, often you'll have an industrial facility in a small town, and they want as much power as the whole town takes, right? You know, 20, 30 megawatts,
yes.
You know, is a big draw, right? And so we're starting to see that people are looking at that, or hydrogen, as you say, or even renewable natural gas. And it's like, okay, that didn't work. And then I think eventually going to come back to, you know, us. And in the meantime, we've been, you know, we being Solar Thermal, have been busy coming down that production curve. And hopefully we're actually, you know, more cost effective when they come back, as opposed to, you know, even the same, right? So.
And I think this is the bottom line, that we have actually adopted to this talk that you need to be cheaper than fossil fuel. And we see that, okay, we just need to raise the bar then. Actually show that we can be cheaper. And the solution here is robotized local mass production of solar collectors. And that we find project partners who are really cost efficient in building the piping and building the thermal heat storages and integrating in the industry. And I think when it comes to the solar collector, we really optimized everything. But when it comes to the project management and the piping and everything else, there is still a lot to learn.
We had those discussions already this morning, right? And how we can do that. So how do you engage in those early project development stages, feasibility, you know, design development? How do you find yourself engaging with the energy users directly?
Yes, actually, we have an online tool that is called the Field Simulator. So if you search Absolicon Field Simulator, you will find something where you very quickly can draw a square on the map next to your factory.
Yes.
And if you draw it, then the size of the floor plan of the factory, then you get a good match. And then it immediately calculates how much heat and steam it will produce, and it also calculates the cost that it could be.
Okay.
So that would be the entry point for an industry interested.
Okay.
And from that, we can do a very quick study of an industry to have the initial documents. And from that, we do a feasibility study that, with a little more precision, it's paid by the industry. And from that, they can really decide, is this the way we want to go or not?
Right, okay.
So when we've done the feasibility study, we need to go more into basic engineering, especially for the integration of the heat into the process.
Right.
And there we have a concept where we have a project exclusivity. So we can do it, but then the industry need to promise that if you achieve those, the KPIs that we have set together, then we will actually do the installation when you present the finals.
Right. Okay.
So that's the steps that we have in the process.
And then when it comes to actually, you know, doing the project and funding the project, do you find more the industries are you know, treating it as a capital project where they fund it themselves, or are they looking at, you know, energy services companies that are financing it and then, you know, charging it as a service over a period of time? Where do you see the industry going?
So we have been surprised that those multinational does not want to take on the investments, even if we can present like 7-8 years payback time.
Yes.
So there are third-party solutions where we can provide what we call heat purchase agreements.
Okay.
Where the company sign up to a 15-year contract and then they have a fixed price or a price with an index calculation on the heat.
Right.
And for those capital-starved companies, that is often a good solution.
Okay, okay. And the companies funding those heat purchase agreements, that they're comfortable with, you know, kind of the risk associated with that, and like how do they think through actually funding those deals in the background?
Yeah, I think solar thermal still being a new technology, it's a little higher financing cost than if you build a big wind farm.
Right, okay, yes.
But there are in Europe at least the two companies specialized on doing solar thermal heat purchase agreements.
Okay, so okay, cool.
There we have a good. And it turned out that there are also different grants that help the cost of those heat purchase agreements.
Right, okay.
And in the U.S. now, we have the Investment Reduction Act.
Yes,
that is
yes.
A big help.
Yes.
And in Europe, we have the trade with carbon rights, the ETS system.
Okay.
So
okay.
That is also increasing the cost of the fossil fuel and makes solar thermal more competitive.
Yeah. Is that similar to the Canadian system? Like we have a carbon tax, and the thinking is that the proceeds of that should then reinvest in a decarbonized economy. Some of it goes back in tax credits to those who need the tax credits, but some of it's intended to reinvest. Is it the same in Europe?
Yes, some of this money from the ETS is going to something called the Innovation Fund.
Okay, yes.
Where you can actually get the 60% reimbursement on a solar thermal field for an industry, for example.
Got it. Okay. You talked about the integration. We should probably touch a bit more about that in terms of, you know, often, you know, when we were at CEM doing a lot of cogen projects, you'd tie in at the medium voltage switchgear and you'd tie in at the steam header and that was it. But to do solar thermal well, the integration is quite different, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, the best thing is, of course, if you can tie in on a steam header.
Right.
Because then the steam from the solar collectors can immediately supply all the process in the industry.
Right.
And what we see is that the pressure in the industry is often set quite arbitrary.
Arbitrary. Yes.
And if they look a little closer, they can reduce this pressure so it fits well with the solar collectors.
Right.
Otherwise, as we've done with this installation I referred to on Carlsberg, and also the installation we've done with Peroni in Italy, we integrate in the steam line further down from the steam head.
Right.
Where they can run 150 degree hot steam.
Okay, yes.
But there is also, of course, the possibility to integrate pressurized hot water even closer to the end process. So there are a number of different integrated points, and this is one of the big challenges, I would say, to find those integration points.
Yes. Yeah, we're seeing that in some of the projects we're working on. It's one thing to size the field, but then to find the best point of the optimal point of integration is a key success factor in the project, right? Is what I think we're seeing. So
what we see also is that as energy has been so cheap, the gas has been so cheap, the industry has not cared if they run to hot steam, for example.
Right.
But they also see that if they want to store energy, steam is very expensive to store.
Yes.
While hot water is very easy to store.
Yeah.
So a strong trend now is actually to have hot water systems instead of steam systems in the factories.
Yeah.
But now we're talking about an industry being around for 100 years and trying to change the way they look.
Yeah.
But I think that if they want to go zero CO2, working with the pressurized hot water is a much better way because it integrates much better with solar thermal and heat pumps and everything.
Let's talk about storage for a minute. So that's something we're exploring. I think it's something you're exploring as well. Where does that work? Where is the optimal place for thermal storage?
Well, then I come back to district heating.
Yes.
In Denmark, there are 120 cities now using solar thermal in their district heating networks.
Wow.
And a number of them have built storages where they actually store the heat from summer to winter.
Wow, seasonal storage.
Seasonal storage. Okay. They basically dig a big hole in the ground and put the liner inside, fill it up with 95 degree hot water in summer, and then put a 1 meter thick insulating lid on top.
Wow, okay.
And in this way, they only have between 5% and 10% losses from summer to winter of this hot water.
You're kidding. Wow, okay.
So heat storage is nothing complicated.
Right.
And those storages, you know, they are 200 times cheaper than storing energy in batteries.
Right, yeah.
So you know how many people talk about storage in batteries? How many talk about pit storages?
Right.
But this is actually the way how you store energy in a cheap way.
Yeah.
And now this is used for those Danish district heating networks, but it can as well be used for this jeans factory I referred to. So that you have a big solar field, you have a pit storage to store the heat over the seasons, and you run your entire jeans production from the hot water in the storage.
Yeah. And to your point earlier, you're not constrained by the lithium supply chain that you are with electrical energy storage, right?
Yes.
Yeah. It's just, can you find an excavator who can dig a hole? It's not quite that simple, but you know what I'm getting at, right?
Yeah. I think what we'll see is that those rare earth metals and other bottlenecks will stop the development of new electricity production.
Yes.
But on the heat sector, we can do a lot without those barriers.
Because in what we're building, these mass-produced solar panels, speaking of materials of construction, it's It's, what is it? It's mostly aluminum. There's some glass. There's some carbon
steel. Steel and glass, basically.
Yeah, which is readily available. It's plentiful, right? Yeah.
And that's also actually reflects on the CO2 that we emit when we build the collectors. Because, okay, we're going to mass produce something now that is going to save the world.
Yes.
But we don't want to destroy the world in the process making
yes,
them.
Yes, yes.
And actually making one piece of 235 watts PV panel, you actually burn 250 kilos of coal to make one PV panel.
Wow.
But thanks to the panel running for 25 years, making electricity, when you divide all the CO2 emissions, you come down to 40 grams per kilowatt hour on the PV panel.
Okay, okay.
Which is about the tenth of what you have now in the grid.
Right, okay.
So it's, of course, much better using the PV panel than the grid, but it's still a lot of coal.
Yes, yes.
But if you look at our solar panels, we don't need this super clean silicon.
Right.
We just need some steel and some glass.
Right.
So
right.
We actually have 8 grams of kilowatt hour, 8 grams of CO2 per kilowatt hour compared to 40 grams.
Okay, wow.
So there's basically no renewable technology that has lower CO2 emissions per kilowatt hour produced than the Absolicon collector.
I love it. I love it. So now, speaking of carbon emissions, I mean, how are there, you had other rules of thumb. Are there some rules of thumb around that? Because I think that's a question we often get is, you know, I have 20,000 tons a year of CO2 emissions. I have 50,000 tons a year of CO2 emissions. You know, are there rules of thumb in terms of solar thermal and its ability to get at those CO2 emissions?
Well, yes. If you think about the solar collector, it has a certain surface. It's in square meters. Usually we measure it.
Yes.
And every year, one square meter can produce between 50 and 100 liters of oil.
Okay, okay.
So you can imagine like a few barrels of oils on each solar collector.
Okay, okay.
So it's actually producing more oil than an oil field.
Right, okay, okay. And when you say producing, you mean producing the heat equivalent to what it would take to burn that. Yeah, okay. Yeah, and I think the thing that, you know, we often look at things as a levelized cost of carbon abated, right? And I think that's an important analysis to do is to look at, okay, what is the, if you take solar thermal or if you take, you know, electric heating or heat pumps or, you know, what is the levelized cost of carbon abated? And that's a good kind of normalization and comparison of these technologies, right? So, yeah, cool. So what does the future look like as we kind of start to wind up here? I mean, we've talked about the technology, we've talked about the business model, we've talked about how you're tying into industry. What's kind of the next 1 to 3 years look like for Absolicon specifically and for the solar thermal industry in general?
Yes, we are starting now to roll out those robotized production lines.
Okay, yes.
Starting with Egypt.
Okay, cool. Excellent.
That will be the first one.
All good things have started in Egypt
over
the last 5,000-6,000 years, right?
And then we have a number of countries now that are on the waiting list, you could say, to get the production lines and who are working with local pipelines to create this market.
Yes, okay.
And then there is a lot of work for Absolicon to help the local entrepreneur to learn all of this that we have discussed now in this pod.
Yes.
How to do the project, how to make money and all of this.
Yeah, okay. So cool.
We are fully occupied, I can say.
And are you also doing some research and development and innovation around the product itself as you go? I mean, trying to walk and chew gum at the same time.
Yeah, you know, we are a technology company.
Yes.
We love R&D. And we had actually created something we called the sandbox.
Ah, okay.
Because we do a lot of EU projects where we lots of plans, where you do planning several years in advance. But now we created a place where you can actually go with an idea. We have a technician employed there and can say, why don't you make a prototype of this?
Oh, cool.
And he can, in a few hours, make something that we can look at and see how that can improve.
Okay.
So the sandbox is really a favorite place now.
And the sandbox is intended to innovate around the solar collector technology.
Yes, and how to reduce the cost of installation in the field.
Yeah,
and also in the integration.
Yeah.
some heat storage,
heat
losses, so a wide range of activities.
Cool, very good.
But we also try to now take a little step back from technology innovation because we have made the best solar parabolic trough in the world, 76.4%.
Yes.
Why do anything better? Let's sell this now.
Let's sell this thing, yeah. Because there was a period where you were experimenting with maybe higher temperatures or maybe higher pressures, I remember, but you've kind of said, no, this is the sweet spot. Let's go and push that out in a big way to the world.
We have products in pipeline for higher temperatures and pressures, but we see there's such a big market for this 160-degree hot
steam. Very cool. Well, as we kind of wrap up, is there anything else we haven't talked about that you were, you know, dying to talk about today?
I think we've covered very nice ground there, I must say.
We have, yes. And it's a privilege for me to, I've listened to you speak many times and you and I have had good conversations and you always have a really well thought out, well educated view on not just solar thermal, but, you know, the energy space in general and business and where they fuse together. So it's just been a total delight that we've been able to get together like this.
I have actually a final success story.
Yes.
You know, in solar term, it works like this, that when you do a new innovation, you need to prove the performance of your collector.
Mm.
And you actually take it to a laboratory in Switzerland.
Okay.
And they put it out in the sun and they measure all the parameters. And that is where you get this 76.4% efficiency. So, and you get a certificate, so the Solar Key Mark.
Okay.
And you can also certify this in the North America with certification. But then you build a solar field with your product.
Yes.
And you know there are many companies in making green innovations, working great in the lab.
Yes.
But then when you get to the real application, how does it work?
Then? Right, right.
And we just got data in from the solar field in Karlsbad, which shows that the whole solar field has the same performance as the solar collector had in the lab.
Wow. Yeah, congratulations. So
all excellent. The points are on the right curve.
So we are
super happy to prove this.
Wow. Okay. So you've been out there promoting it and now you're backing it up with real results.
Yes. We can show that the installation we done have the same performance as the proven data from the lab.
I love it. Excellent. Well, Joachim, if people who are listening to this want to get in touch with you, I mean, what's the best way? Is it LinkedIn? Is it email? What's the best way to find
LinkedIn
you?
LinkedIn is good.
Okay.
Yeah. And Google us and Google the videos that we have. Become friend with us on LinkedIn and see the flow of videos that we do there.
The videos are great. That's what hooked me 2 years ago was the videos are well done. They're exciting. They get the infographics, but also the you see the production line almost right away and the robots and. It's just fascinating stuff.
I think we managed to get the world to understand this, that heat is half. I mean, we see in both the World Bank and the IMF using this heat is half when they're talking about energy.
Okay.
So they also look at us our videos. So.
Good. That's good. Excellent. Well, thank you again for coming and thank you again for being on the podcast. Real pleasure to have you. In person. This is the first in-person podcast we've done, I think, since COVID, right? So it's been a while. We used to do them all like this and now we're back doing them and you're our first one post COVID. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
A real pleasure.
Yeah.
And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in. This was, I would say a special edition of Energy Radio with, Joachim Bystrom in person, talking about solar thermal and how heat is half of our emissions and we need to get at it and get at it quickly. Thank you for listening and until next time, stay safe and do your part to make the world a better, more functional place. Thank you.